welcome once again to the psychedelicparenting.org podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jonathan. Today in the USA, we are celebrating Memorial Day, when we honor those who have died fighting for their country. This day was first celebrated as Dedication Day in 1868 to honor the fallen soldiers of the Union Army who had died fighting against slavery in the South. Today I would like to include in this day of honor the fallen veterans of the drug war, those who have been killed, and those who face lifetime prison sentences, those who gave all for the plants and their people. In the comments section this week, I'd love to hear your stories of remembering our fallen warriors of any conflict. Share your memories of their sacrifices and how your family keeps those sacrifices honored and remembered throughout the years. On a lighter note, I always like to thank people who contribute to our work and psychedelic parenting. Today, I would like to thank Henry V. Henry has translated some of our podcast's introductions into Finnish and has shared them on Facebook, increasing our listenership in Finland. So thank you very much, Henry. Before we start this week's interview with Danny Litton, I would like to bring to your attention an upcoming event that is shaping up to be really exciting. This international multidisciplinary event is entitled Beyond Psychedelics 2016, and it is a joint project of the psychedelic researchers based at the National Institute of Mental Health Czech Republic and some members of the Czech Psychedelic Society. As the title indicates, they will focus on a broader context of psychedelic experiences, including a variety of purpose, setting, and external factors that influence psychedelic use. Topics about the position which psychedelics hold in modern-day society will also be discussed. The conference takes place on 30th of September through October 2nd, 2016, in beautiful Prague, Czech Republic. Confirmed speakers include Dennis McKenna, Rick Doblin, Amanda Felding, Bill Abate, Luisa Eduarda Luna, Robin Carhart-Harris, Ben Sessa, Ingmar Gorman, Jonathan Dickinson, and many others. They are currently accepting abstracts for presentations through June 21st. I'll be submitting one myself, so maybe we'll see each other there. You can find links to their website in the program notes to the show for more information about the event. As always, please remember that if you like what you see and hear at Psychedelic Parenting, you can make a tax-deductible donation to our work through our fiscal sponsor, MAPS, by clicking the purple donate button in the program notes, or by buying stuff through one of our Amazon links. And now I would like to introduce today's guest, Danny Litton. Danny is a father to a magical 3-year-old son, a recent graduate from the University of Minnesota, is the executive administrative assistant to Dennis McKenna at Symbio Life Sciences, is a music enthusiast and producer, an artist, psychonaut, and explorer. Danny says he hopes to heal and inspire through complete surrender to love by performing acts of radical acceptance and vulnerability. Danny and I met in 2013 at the Promega Bioethics Forum, which is now called the International Forum on Consciousness, in Madison, Wisconsin, where I also met Dennis McKenna and Rick Doblin for the first time, and where the ideas that animate this website and podcast were first seeded in my mind. So thank you so much for being on the show, Danny.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
No problem. So why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about yourself, your history, and how you got interested in psychedelics?
Sure. Yeah, I guess it's kind of the typical psychedelic welcoming. I moved out to Colorado for Colorado State University and thought I was going to pursue psychology major. And when I went out there, I got introduced to electronic music. And the first electronic music show I ever went to, I ended up eating some acid. And that kind of opened up a whole new world for me. But it was more of just kind of a recreational party drug at that time. You know, go to the show and the floor is melting into the wall, all that kind of stuff, you know, auditory hallucinations, you know, the usual kind of intro to psychedelics, ate mushrooms, went on walks into the mountains. So a very beautiful introduction. And it wasn't only about a year later that I got really opened up to what psychedelics have to offer. I accidentally got dosed at a show. The whole vial ended up falling into my hand into a puddle, and I was kind of in the middle of all my friends and couldn't throw it anywhere, so I ended up just taking one for the team and took it down. And at that moment, you know, for the next 6 to 8 hours was just completely opened to this other realm that is coexisting with this one, and really just had a mind-opening experience. What it showed me is that, you know, these are tools, and these are not just toys. They can be fun, but they also have a potential for healing and for awakening, I guess. They can completely change your perspective on life, and I think that they always will. And so then I kind of, you know, with that experience that I went through, got me very curious and just started researching what kind of work has been done with these, and, you know, found all the greats. And I just realized that there was a huge community of people taking it as seriously as I wanted to. And I started looking up to these people and reaching out. And I ended up moving back to Minneapolis and went to the Minneapolis College of Art and Design after that first semester, because I knew I had to be an artist. After I experienced what I did, I knew that I had to somehow express this feeling that I had and these visions that I had. So I moved back here, stayed for a semester, and realized I needed to be back out in the mountains. So I went out to the Rocky Mount College of Art and Design and did the hippie art thing there. Mm-hmm. And my girlfriend at the time moved out there with me from Minnesota. And we were there just in experiencing life, experiencing this wonderful mystical world. It was just complete magic. And we ended up going our own separate ways while we were out there. And about 4 months after we had gone our own ways, I got a phone call saying that we were pregnant.
Oh, my.
And so very unexpected. You know, neither of us had been with anyone else after that. So, you know, we still held each other in our hearts. We were just taking time to be with ourselves. But so we figured it's best to move back to Minnesota and be with our family. And we moved back and decided to raise Zariah together, our, at that time, unborn son. And I had to really come to terms with the fact that I was going to be a father. It felt like I needed to be a father. And, you know, when I look back at it, probably wasn't ready. But I don't know if anyone really is.
I don't think we are, no.
but so, you know, basically had to drop out of school for a couple years and just go to work nonstop. And, you know, it was actually quite interesting, because when we found out that she was pregnant, I had already been signed up for a course out in Vienna, Austria, to go and take a visionary art painting course with Philip Jacobson, who's from the same family as Ernst Fuchs, who's a famous visionary artist who actually just passed away a few months ago. Just the grandfather of visionary arts. His work is just the work. I mean, this is the guy who all my favorite artists look up to and bow down to. Uh-huh. This guy was just the guy. And Philip had a chance 20 or 30 years ago to study under him. And so I had the opportunity to go and study with Philip. And, you know, I asked Tosh if it was okay if I still went and did that. You know, she'd be around 7 and 8 months pregnant at that time. And, you know, I had already paid for the trip, already signed up, already had all the materials, everything, mm-hmm. plane ticket bought. And so I, Tosh gave me the blessing of going, and I went. And I think that was a really impactful experience, just, you know, knowing that this baby was going to be maturing inside of Tosh, and she was going to be all on her own for a couple months while caring for him. And then I came home, and within a couple weeks, the Zariah was born, and, you know, just a very... Mm-hmm. But it was such an important experience for me, because I just got to really, for 1 month, just really just be myself for the last time ever, and really just kind of experience this mystical state before, you know, all of a sudden I had to devote all of my time and energy and love into this other creature, mm-hmm. Which has been the greatest blessing of my life. But, you know, it's going from a 22-year-old hippie artist kid to full-time daddy and working is quite the shift. But
yes, indeed. So it's a pretty natural inclination to sort of like hunker down and come home when the next generation starts to appear, you know?
Right. Yeah. And just having the family and support and community and, you know, the tribe, you know, it really does take a tribe to raise these kids. And
it does.
It's just so grateful to have had, you know, her family and my family involved this whole time. So, mm-hmm. Huge plus.
And so tell us about your son.
So my son is named Zariah. He's the man. He's three and a half years. He's 3.5 years old. And I am just so in love with this kid. It's just whenever anyone asks me to describe him, I have no idea where to start. I'm sure all parents experience that, but it's just the amount of love and compassion and wonder and curiosity and reflection that he has, that he carries with himself, is just so beautiful and so humbling. And I learned so much by just witnessing him experience life. He, you know, he obviously looks up to both mom and dad. Unfortunately, mom and dad aren't together at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And that's been kind of a experience that we've gone back and forth. You know, that started when we first went our own ways in Colorado and then came back together for Zariah, you know, this will save us type thing. Mm-hmm. And then we've been kind of on and off since he's been born. You know, I love her dearly. She's my best friend and I'm so inspired by her and her, willingness to commit so much of herself to Zariah and to her passions. And so I've been struggling a lot with that as of lately. Actually, that has come up. That's been my most recent thing I've had to endure is this pain about not being with mommy. I wonder what that's like for him. I always try to ask him how he's feeling about certain things. And it's so hard, you know, he's 3.5 years old. And mm-hmm. just the other day, he woke up 2 days ago and was just like, Daddy, I'm just so tired of going from here to there, from here to there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I had to really sit with that and wonder what that meant to him. And, you know, last night I was eating food. We're just eating dinner alone in my apartment, this kind of big, tall ceilinged apartment. It's a beautiful place in Minneapolis. And I was sitting there and I just had this huge wave of sadness just crash over me, of, you know, am I not doing enough? And is Zariah, does he feel safe? Does he feel like he's got a home? Does he feel like he can be himself? Or is he always in this state of let's go from point A to point B to point C and he just never feels grounded? Mm. And I just let that really come in and it hit me so hard. And our dear brother, David, was there to kind of rescue me or sit with me, you know, reached out and he was there to be attentive and just kind of sat with me as I experienced that pain.
What a sweet fellow he is.
Oh, yeah. I'm so grateful to have crossed paths and be able to communicate with him on a daily basis. The guy is just a superhero of a man. And I know you got the chance to have him on the show and I loved that so much. And I'm just so grateful because when I met him, he was a dad. You asked me about Zariah. I ended up talking about myself and others. I'm sorry. Let me get back to Zariah. But he is just so his ability to just be vulnerable and to put himself out there and to just let the music flow through him. You know, I'll bring him out to jazz shows, try mm-hmm. to go out once a week just to some live local jazz shows.
Nice.
And the kid is just so in it. He is just the rhythm just flows through this kid. And anytime we're in the car, I play music, all sorts. I'm mm-hmm. a big hip hop head, electronic music, but I also, you know, play Dylan and the Beatles. And, you know, I try to give him a huge range of ethnic music and everything. And every time I put anything on, he is just on beat, tapping his leg, shaking his head. And now he started singing. And this kid is just something else. I'm just so grateful every night. I thank God or whatever it is so much to have blessed me with him. And one of my other dear friends here in the Minneapolis music community has twins and I went over to their house and before we ate dinner, they did a gratitude, just a gratitude prayer. Mm-hmm. And they asked each kid to, you know, what are you grateful for today? And, you know, these kids are 3.5, you know, this was 6 months ago and mm-hmm. they were just spouting off everything, you know, from the cup to mommy to the cabinet, you know, just saying whatever things. But then there were some things that, you know, really, you know, they would sit silently for a second and then really reflect and just like point at their brother and say, I'm grateful for him, you know, and just seeing that was so beautiful. And so right away I was like, I need to implement this with Zariah. This is so amazing to mm-hmm. see, you know, it starts off with silly things around the room or whatever, or experiences they had that day. But as it evolves, it turns into this amazing practice of really deep self-reflection mm-hmm. and, you know, just, and asking him, you know, he'll say, I'm grateful for the, and I'll do this before bed every night. And I'm grateful for the bed. I'm grateful for the snack. I'm grateful for daddy and mommy. And I say, well, what about the water? And he says, and for the water and for the fire and for the wind and for, you know, and all of a sudden this kid sounds like a tuned in medicine man. And he's all of a sudden thanking for the most just beautiful, simple stuff, things that I wouldn't even think of. And it's, you know, just has no filters and just lets whatever come out, and, just a blessing to witness, you know. And right. He's just so goofy, you know, saying mm-hmm. thank you for your poopy, thank you for your face, you know, and then mix in with just beautiful truths of life too. It's an awesome thing to witness.
Yeah, you know, I think that one of the things that's really great about being a parent who has a practice that involves plant medicines is that you really get to see on a day-to-day basis what it is like to live in that space that psychedelics can take us to. Because I think, like, you know, kids sort of are just psychedelic inherently. They're just, right. They're open, they're like receptive, like all the qualities you're describing about your son, like that's just how kids are. They're like, they have less ego and it hasn't sort of been constructed yet. And so they're open and receptive and welcoming and compassionate.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's just so amazing to have access to those experiences through these sacred tools, to be able to witness that and see the world like a kid and to just see it with new eyes, and then to witness Uriah do that exact same thing every day. He brings me into a psychedelic realm, mm-hmm. just being with him and just for a moment shutting out every other filter that I might have from the day or the stress or whatever, and just stopping, just breathing with him and just seeing things as him and letting inanimate objects become animate and mm-hmm. personifying things. And that state, I think, is what we're all really after, yeah. Tapping back into that, especially artists and creatives, mm-hmm. But everyone. I think that's the goal. I think creativity flows the most when we can be in that state.
That's great. I just got this CD set that I haven't even listened to yet, but it's called Practices for Growing Up Mindful. It's by a psychologist, Christopher Willard, and it's a bunch of like meditation techniques that you can teach to little kids, and it sort of starts out with really young kids and goes all the way up to teenagers. So I'm looking forward to checking this out and seeing what it sounds like.
Oh, that's super beautiful. Yeah. This course that I just had today, the last class of it was called Peace Building Through Mindfulness.
Nice.
And with this amazing professor, Mark Umbright, who works at the Center for Spirituality and Healing at the University of Minnesota, mm-hmm. In the same center as Dennis. They're not affiliated with one another, but you know, my course at the university or my career there has been just super special. Since I had that 2-year gap in my education due to raising Zariah and kind of skipping back and forth through schools trying to find my place, mm-hmm. There was an amazing opportunity to take this multidisciplinary studies program through the College of Continuing Education, mm-hmm. at the U. And what it basically was, there was a course where we had to completely design our own major. So we had to read all about everything the U had to offer and construct we had to design our own program. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we had to find a theme and we had to have all of the courses tie back into that theme.
Gotcha.
And so the university has the Center for Spirituality of Healing, Center for Spirituality and Healing, that offers such amazing courses, but you can't major in any of those. They're mainly just for the nursing students who want to integrate some alternative practices. But luckily with this, multidisciplinary studies major, I was able to take all of these amazing courses and tie it into my major, which was the three focuses that I had were ethnopharmacology, anthropology, and art,
nice.
Which was just so great. You know, the ethnopharmacology with Dennis's two courses, the botanical medicines, and then also people, plants, and drugs, which was an intro to ethnopharmacology.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing. You know, they were both online courses with Dennis, so there was not as much face-to-face contact. But he was just so responsive to students. You know, the more you wrote, the more he would write. Mm-hmm. Super engaging, really great content. And it was just, you know, this past 2 years of going to the U has just been a total trip. Because I've been taking just the most amazing courses with the most amazing people and learned so much. And I get to leave with a piece of paper that says I'm, you know, qualified for something. You know, as I was going through it, I was like, I have no idea what this is going to qualify me for.
Right.
Luckily, I've linked up with these amazing people throughout this experience. So I guess it qualified me for that, to be working with Symbio. You know, I just look back and I'm convinced that everything has happened for a reason. And, you know, having Zariah has given me this level of devotion and surrender to, you know, all the other pressures of being a kid and wanting to fit in and go out and party and all that. All of that went out the door. I mean, I still go and see music and I'll still go and have crazy experiences with friends. But at the end of the day, I'm just trying to become a better person for Zariah. And that painful experience that I had last night of just that harrowing experience.
Mm-hmm.
What I came to the conclusion was that mom and dad might not be together. And that's kind of the modern, that's kind of what happens nowadays. You know, it's not ideal, but if it can't work, mom and dad just split and go their own ways. And I've just devoted myself so fully to these medicines and to this culture and to this family and to this tribe, and in order to become the clearest conduit I can for whatever is trying to come through in these experiences. And I think that right there is the most that I could ever do for Zariah, is to try to fully embody that.
Mm-hmm.
And try to live that and allow that to live through me.
Right on.
Yeah, that's kind of what that was my most recent, when I went down to Peru this last August. The main thing was surrender to the plants and let them do the work through you. And that was kind of the final lesson I got from it. You know, had to die a bunch of times and, you know, become one with Gaia and have the snakes take over me and purify me and the purging of the negativity. But what it really came down to was just, okay, this is trying to do something here. This is trying to let its voice be heard. Let me be its voice. It's trying to take action. Let me take action for it. Mm-hmm. Let it take action through me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been an honor to, the more I devote myself to that and the more I surrender to that, the more opportunities seem to provide themselves. I'm just honored by all of this. So.
Yeah, there's a certain sense, I think, when you're really on your path of like your passion, and I guess you could even say there's the word vocation is good. It's like the path that is the one that's made for you by the divine, you know, this is what your work is for your life. And I think that being a parent is a vocation. And I think that, you know, when you were in the flow, but in that sense of, you know, it's clear to me that this is what I need to be doing. This is where, when I'm doing it, I feel the most alive. And when I do it and put my energy toward it, it's hard work, but it, at the same time, almost seems effortless.
Right.
Yeah. That's when you know you're really doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
Yeah. And that's exactly how I feel when I'm doing this work, is it feels like, even though I put in a lot of extra hours and it doesn't really, you know, it's basically just an expensive hobby, but, but, you know, it makes me feel alive and it makes me feel like I'm serving the plants and serving God and doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
And let me just take a moment to say thank you so much for all that you've done. And the psychedelic parenting, meme, that concept was never a thing for me. It was never, you know, I know I'm a psychedelic parent, but utilizing what we've learned to become better parents and, you know, to meeting you and talking with you and hearing about, you know, having my son potentially being a sitter sometime, I had never thought of such a concept. even as a psychedelic explorer, that concept was beyond me. And all of a sudden I thought about it and I was like, what else would be, I can't think of anything more beautiful than that.
Yeah.
And I'm just so grateful that you've devoted so much time and energy and love and passion and compassion to this project. And I think we're going to look back on this and, you know, you're a pioneer.
Thanks,
man. I'm just so grateful and honored to call you my friend, and for all the work that you've done and continue to do. It's an honor to see others devoting themselves to these medicines, and for you to tap into such a domain that hasn't been explored enough and has so much potential. I'm just humbled by that. So thank you for doing this.
Thank you for saying so. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about your relationship with Dennis and your recent trip to Peru?
Sure. So when I moved back to Minnesota, I met up with Dennis. It was kind of funny. So Dennis and I's first communication was maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I was about to smoke the medicine for the first time. And, you know, I had seen Dennis in DMT Spirit Molecule and mm-hmm. Seen him all over YouTube with his brother. And so I was just anxious as fuck. I was just so
every
worried.
Every single time, man. Every single time.
Every single time since then, too. But, you know, this as the first time going into this, what am I about to do? You know, I had done the array of psychedelics. I had heard all these mystical stories and, oh, God. So on a whim, I just found who I thought was Dennis McKenna on Facebook. There was a couple of them. I just chose the one that, you know, came up first. And I wrote this huge thing. And I think it was more just a practice for me to be like, I'm just going to put my anxiousness into writing this psychedelic dude. So I just wrote this out. I'm super nervous. I'm going to be with my girlfriend. I'm going to be with my friend who's an urban shaman, all this. And I know you're not going to get this. And if you get this, I know you're not going to respond, but I'm just putting this out there. I'm going to smoke this in a few hours. Thank you for listening. Thank you for reading. If you did, goodbye. You know, and it was kind of, you know, just my attempt at feeling comfortable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, an hour later, I got a vibrate in my pocket and looked down and message from Dennis. My kind of holy shit. Whoa. So I open it up and it's this huge, amazing response or longer than my initial message. Just so comforting, you know, and just telling me that, like, if you weren't nervous, I'd consider you a crazy person.
Right.
You know, every sane person gets butterflies every time. And you know, you're going to be with a person you love and a trusted friend, and it's going to be sunset. And he's like, I don't see why not. There's no reason not to. He said, you know, just trust yourself and just remember that the only way out is to go in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just some really great psychedelic wisdom right before going into this. And all of a sudden I was like, I can do this. Mm-hmm. And had this just amazing breakthrough experience. And ended up writing back to him and just thanking him so much for being there for me. And, you know, he was just so responsive at that time. And it's funny because if you write the guy on Facebook now, he won't ever Facebook's not a thing for him anymore, you know, besides kind of telling him what's going on. So I don't know what just a magical moment in time when Dennis was attentive to Facebook and happened to write me back.
Right.
And so that just felt, you know, really special for me. Uh-huh. And so when I moved back from Colorado and was going to go back to the university, I was like, what the fuck, what am I going to study? I can't do art as, you know, I don't want to say I can't do art as a dad, but, you know, I've got to take myself a little bit more seriously, I think. And so I reached out to Dennis and we met up and he met me at the Starbucks on campus, which is, he calls his second office. And, you know, I was kind of like, what do I do? You know, what's needed in the psychedelic community right now? You know, he's like, well, honestly, just scientists, you know, and I'm not a scientist by any means. I'm not, I wish that I could do that. And hopefully I can tap into that at some point. But, you know, I kind of told him my path and he's kind of like, well, I guess you'll just have to figure this out. So I kind of signed up for his classes and found this program and just went for it and designed my own thing. And I just kept bugging him. And that was kind of our relationship for a while. It was me just being super persistent with our communication, just trying to keep up with him. How can I help you? What's going on? Anything new, fun, and exciting coming up? And so I just kept bugging him and kept helping him with small projects here and there. And then he had this course called Plants and Human Affairs mm-hmm. at the university, which would in the past it went to Brazil and Peru. And through the university, and they'd go there and study the traditional plant medicines. I never really understood if they actually went and took the medicines,
mm-hmm.
But that ended up getting canceled 2 years in a row because not enough people signed up. So they never actually happened. But for them, I, you know, helped them out with marketing, got it in the local this paper called The City Pages. I got it online, did an ad in there, you know, because my father has a party supply store, and we had a here in Minneapolis. So we already had a relationship with them. So I kind of, you know, snuck in and, you know, said, can we please do this for my professor? That kind of stuff. And helped him any way that I could with that. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. it didn't work out. But he started to pick up on that I was really serious about, you know, helping him out in his mission and just truly believed in what Dennis is doing here. And eventually he just, you know, invited me, you know, since Danny, these programs aren't working, how about you come out to Peru with me just on one of my trips, on one of my retreats? And looked into it, and with a friend and his two brothers and mother. But we ended up going, and that was this last August. I got to go out to Peru and work with ayahuasca.
At Wilcatica?
At Wilcatica in Urubamba, outside of Cusco. And was just, you know, the whole thing was just beyond me. The grounds themselves, Wilcatica was just the most beautiful place I had ever been. Just, it was just like the Garden of Eden with just every healing plant ever. And
nice.
Just so green. And it was so strange because it was kind of in this high elevation desert region. And yet you walk through the gates and instantly are just bombarded with nature. And it just felt so welcoming and loving. The grounds were so magnificent with different chakra gardens. And this lady, Carol Cumes, who have built this place from the ground up, was there, and she lives there and is just so devoted to this and just such an amazing mission. And her and Dennis had built a beautiful relationship, and working with Wyra, the ayahuascaro down there, who was, you know, Dennis has worked with countless medicine men, and by far, he says by far Wyra is his favorite and is the, you know, and so for me, being my first time experiencing this, to experience it with an ayahuascaro, someone who I really look up to, my mentor, who is, you know, a veteran of this stuff, say that this is his favorite medicine man to work with, was pretty powerful. And he was right. I mean, this guy was the most humble, loving, caring, gentle, but strong and passionate. Just, this guy has embodied so much of what I thought this plant medicine was. I could tell that this plant was just living through him.
The person who pours for my circle has that, a very similar quality, is a strength. Like, you know that this person is strong, and you know that they can hold the space for you, but at the same time, they don't impose themselves on your experience. Or it's like, you know, the role of God is that God is like all powerful, and yet for some reason still gives people free will.
Right.
And that's the really great medicine men and women have that same quality, that they like, I'll hold the space for you and make a safe place for you to have your experience. And I won't, you know, I'm not trying to like induce any particular thing in you. It's your work, but I'll make sure that it's safe and keep you comfortable.
Totally. And one of the most powerful things about Wyra is just, you know, after we would have a session, and the next morning we would have our integration session with the group, you know, certain people would be like, Wyra, you're just such an amazing shaman. You know, and he would stop them right there and say, I appreciate what you're saying, but I am not a shaman. I just work with the plants. You know, it's not about me. I appreciate what you're saying, but let's try to keep it off that. You know, I'm not a shaman. I'm just work for the plants. And when he said that, I was like, oh my gosh, that's what Dennis says. This is, that's exactly what Dennis says. I work for the plants, you know,
right.
And that, you know, just to surrender that power or that recognition to the medicine is key. I think that's like the end goal, you know, and to have these two people who have devoted their whole lives to this medicine, you know, give the power to the medicine and totally surrender that recognition is just so powerful. And that's something beautiful about Dennis too, is that he's constantly learning. And I've gotten to go to these different biopharmaceutical technology institute conferences, consciousness conferences that they hold yearly in Madison.
Yeah.
And this next one is coming up here this next Thursday and Friday in a week from now, or I guess it will be a week or two past once this airs. So that was another initial part where Dennis and I's relationship kind of grew. He always invited me to those, and I would just get to be standing around a room with the giants of the psychedelic community and just have conversations with people who are doing huge things. And the first year I went just dressed in, you know, hippie clothes and had, you know, just had no idea what to expect. You know, I'm going to a psychedelic conference and I thought everyone was just going to be weird and crazy and trippy. And I walk in and it's all, you know, mainly older men, 50 plus, you know, some young people, some women too, not discriminating, but for the majority, you know, older professional men with button up shirts and ties and suits. And I'm just was totally out of place. But these conversations that were had and the guests that were there completely blew my mind. And these are people that have devoted their entire lives and studies to just wonderful things, to, mm-hmm. to the study of plants and, how they affect the brain, and, anthropologists, all over the board.
The guests that they had last year, like there's people like talking about how plants like talk to one another and nurture their babies. And it was like incredible people.
Right. Yeah. You know, I got to meet some amazing people like Jeremy Narby, who yes. I just love as a person and as a writer. And he taught me a lot. And those conversations, you know, the conversations had there in general outside of the conference, outside of the actual formal discussion, are some of the most impactful discussions I've ever had. And for these guys for these guys to just be level-headed and so humble and just willing to share time and space with whoever approaches them is just a truly amazing gift. And I've just noticed in the past couple of years how Dennis's vocabulary is continuously impacted by these different conversations that he has with these people and different mm-hmm. talks that he goes to. Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful to see someone, you know, who's 65 years old, who's been in the game for a long time, whose, you know, brother is a huge psychedelic advocate and speaker, you know, who knows everyone under the sun in the psychedelic community, and yet whose vocabulary and reference points and perspectives on life in general are completely impacted by the experiences that he has on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And it's just so wonderful. You know, he's not trying to preach any one thing. Mm-hmm. He's always allowing, and he's not a preacher. He's not a preacher by any means.
Right.
He's just learning. He's learning just as much as any of us are. And he's just, in a place of power where people will listen to him and, mm-hmm. and just to be in that role and to continuously be learning and, providing that new knowledge on different formats is just I'm just grateful to have that as a person to look up to.
I would totally agree with that, and I also have to sort of second your all the stuff you're saying about the bioethics forum. Now it's called the Forum on Consciousness. But yeah, is that there's the things that I really like about that conference are that it's small. And the people that are in the audience are the people that are normally on stage at every other conference. And, right. And the other thing that's really great is the fact that they serve, I think the fact that they like serve breakfast and lunch on site is and keep everybody in the space is what really facilitates those intense conversations. This podcast, my work is in some ways a product of the ProMega conference, because my first ProMega conference was 2013, and it's the first time that I was having a real, like, you know, actual conversation with Dennis, someone had introduced us, and I had just gotten sort of reintroduced to psychedelics. I had taken about a decade off, and also my sort of reinitiation was that I tried DMT for the first time, and all this stuff came back, and I had opportunities to try a couple other things and get back into the space. And I was telling Dennis this, and I said, I'm having these experiences, and they're sort of reminding me about what's important in my life and why I think the things that I do. And I said, but I can't really, you know, the people in my life, my friends, I can't really talk to them about this stuff. And he just like, deadpan looks at me and goes, well, I guess you need to get some new friends then. Maybe you should get some new friends. That's what you mean. Maybe you should get some new friends. And you know
that's
what?
Cool.
Yeah. Nice. It was just like, he's like, huh, I guess he's right. Like, so, you know, I went and got some new friends and started doing this work. And yeah. And the other thing about Dennis is that he, as he was talking to me that first time I met him, like, it's interesting that I have so many of the same opinions with him as him, but I thought later on it, and I'm like, you know, so much of who I am as a person is has to do with like having interacted with like his ideas and Terrence's ideas when I was in college. And so it's not so much that like we share the same opinions. It's like I've been cribbing his opinion for half of my life. You know what I mean?
That's hilarious. It is. It's, you know, I don't know if we should wrap up, you know, Dennis hates when people talk about him so much. He starts blushing and starts, hey, let's move on. He never wants to be the center of attention. I've just been so blessed to, you know, have such intimate experiences with him from the past few years that it's, you know, after Peru, we got to travel to Bolivia together, him and I and this other lady. Uh-huh. And we, you know, shared a hotel room for those 10 days or so. And, you know, went to all these amazing sites, you know, Tiwanaku right outside of La Paz in Bolivia, which has just the most tripped out. It's just one of the most tripped out archaeological sites ever. Graham Hancock talks about it in his books, you know, just amazing inscriptions, huge stones, huge mm-hmm. sites. And to witness this alongside Dennis was just amazing. You know, this, he's so well read. And this guy's just a science fiction nerd. So you could see his mind just lighting up and trying to put theories to this stuff. And for him to be so open to just sharing all of those experiences with this little 24-year-old kid, mm-hmm. And talk so openly and let me into his life, into his thoughts, was really touching. And I don't know why he feels so comfortable with me, I often like even talking to especially talking to you right now, talking to Dennis, talking with Bob and David, going to these conferences and just having people actually like want to talk to me or want me to work with them or anything is just so far beyond. I don't understand it, but I'm just so grateful for it. And
I feel the same way, man. Definitely.
It's just so cool to be a part of this community and to feel like I actually have a place in life. And for these medicines that have done so much for me and so much for others that I love so much, mm-hmm. To see that this is our tie together, and you know that all these religions are and practices are all talking about these concepts, and we can talk from direct experience. We don't need to talk about from the books that we read. We can relate them back to that, and that's fine. But I really think a lot of these concepts that all these people are talking about, and that all these religions and things, it's exactly what we've gotten to experience. And if you can just try to embody those and live by those, some strange fabric of quantum entanglement brings these people together. This medicine gets inside of you and it starts working through you whether you like it or not. Mm-hmm. And you'll continue to cross paths. And as long as you devote yourself to whatever is coming up from that stuff, nothing but magic happens. And it's not easy work. And it's not, you know, so many times you have to question if this is right. And am I crazy? And should I be a normal person and all that? But every time that I sit with any type of medicine, I'm reminded that I need to bring whatever I'm experiencing now forward. And this needs to be a part of our culture. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that psychedelics are the way. They're just a way, or they are a door to this experience that you don't have to practice for 30 years to get to. You don't have to read all these books. You just need to pop this tab or eat this mushroom or drink this brew, and you're going to have an experience that might be the most meaningful experience of your life.
It will very likely be, I think.
It will very likely be. I've yet to hear anyone say that was just another walk in the park.
I think with mushrooms, if you have a mushroom experience and it is not the most powerful experience of your life, just take more next time.
Right. And
eventually you'll get there.
And I think what's really cool about all of these studies that are being done, you know, whether it's the LSD scans or other neuroscientists looking for how the brain is reacting during these experiences, or we're starting, and we have, you know, there's amazing writers, but we're starting to get a shared perspective on reality, and we're starting to get a collective, we're maturing with time. You know, you're your work is an example of that. You know, it's just it's an integration of these concepts into real life situations. You know, it's not about just trippers going out and tripping together and having a trippy experience and then talking about their trips.
Right.
It's not that anymore. It's how do we utilize these medicines in our daily lives and become better people and healing the people of the world so that we can better take care of this place, because we are running out of time as far as I'm concerned. And that's why I think these are such powerful agents, because there is no time involved. The work will take time, but the experience itself, is instantaneous. And that's why I really think we need to start. I'm so caught up in the I think the work that's being done to use these as medicines in a pharmaceutical sense is really important, and I'm so grateful for all the work that's been done there, but I'm really not too sure if that's the answer. I think legality for me resonates way more.
Yes, I agree.
You shouldn't have to be sick to take these medicines.
Right.
Everyone should have access to these, and they provide so much for anyone who's willing to sit with them. So that's been, you know, and not being a scientist and not being an amazing writer or speaker, I'm still trying to find my place in this community. Mm-hmm. I just know that I absolutely am so grateful for what they've done for me. I'm so grateful for the work that is being done with them.
Mm-hmm.
I've yet to find where I am supposed to be. And so I'm just so grateful that the Symbio team has kind of taken me under their wing and provided me just an opportunity to do some grunt work and some creative work and some brainstorming and just be involved in the communication and starting to understand business and why we need to do these things. And I'm starting to get a broader perspective on the potential of these medicines. And,
let's lead into that, because I think we're kind of organically going there anyway. So why don't you talk a little bit about Symbio and what the future holds?
Sure. Yeah. So Symbio Life Sciences is kind of what Dennis has been trying to manifest for years. It's you know, this has always been what he's wanted to do. He just hasn't had the correct platform or team or opportunity to do it. You know, he's not. I don't think Dennis is a businessman per se.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what he has to say and what he has done and all of that is very valuable. It's just been waiting for the correct platform to do the work. So I'm probably not the best representative of the company, and I would hate to speak out of it wrong. So take this as a disclaimer of Danny is not the pro here.
Right.
Just the little measly worker in the background trying to help when I can. You know, Symbio is a parent company that seeks to find opportunities to work with different sacred medicines from around the world, opportunities that we feel are necessary at this moment in time and that we are presented with. And, you know, Dennis being as connected as he is, he's got a lot of people talking with him.
Right.
And so it's kind of as a team, our responsibility to really come up with what do we feel the world needs right now and what is going to make the most impact. It's this parent company that takes on this role for a certain amount of time, comes up with the business plan. It comes up with the concepts, how we're going to represent ourselves, what we're going to do, what plants we're going to work with, how we're going to interact with that community that's providing the medicine, who the medicine is going to, all of the whole business plan, and it creates this spinoff from Symbio and gets all the people organized, the whole team, and kind of pushes it on its way. And then then Symbio takes a step back, says, okay, we've got that going, you know, obviously checks in with that. It's the parent company. It makes sure that it's running correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes another step back and says, okay, let's reevaluate. It's been a year now. Where is our energy most needed? And that's what's, for me, that's what's the most beautiful part about it, is that it's this ever-evolving, always flowing, ever-perceiving, you know, just taking a glance, or, you know, taking a step back to see where are we and what does the world need right now.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a really cool thing, and you know, I have to kind of talk about it in abstractions because I'm not the speaker and representative of it, because we're working with this guy who has put his entire life into this, and who has inspired probably millions of people around the world to start exploring these medicines deeper. And so to be working alongside someone who has impacted all of us so much is really a special opportunity. And anytime I can help out with anything, I'm just so it feels like I'm actually doing the work I'm supposed to be doing.
Oh, sure.
Even if it's making a PowerPoint for a presentation they'll give at a conference. I don't love making PowerPoints, but I fucking love making this PowerPoint. And, like, it's so strange how the intention behind something can completely transform how you feel about doing something. But, you know, any of this, it just feels like I'm doing something right. I go to bed feeling like I'm actually doing something that's going to impact the world and its inhabitants, even if it's making a silly PowerPoint or whatever it might be. It feels like I'm doing work for generations in the future, you know?
Yeah.
Much of what I feel like you're probably feeling when you do these podcasts and when you do these interviews and are doing this research, it's sure it's about you and about your relationship with your kids, but it's way beyond that. And it's, yes. And we're doing work right now, just like all these other pioneers of the psychedelic community are doing work now that could possibly not be enacted until they're dead, and most likely not, because of how laws are passed and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. We're all just devoting ourselves to this thing that we want humans in the future to be able to experience and to reflect back upon and say, wow, look at how grateful we are for these people who put in the work. And that's, you know, I feel like I'm standing on the shoulder of giants when I am making that PowerPoint. You know, it seems so simple and trivial or whatever it might be, but it's a part of this way larger wave that I am just riding the peak of and just trying my best and darndest to portray whatever work has been done. Just trying, I don't know how to put that into words, but you know,
it's beautiful. And you're totally right on, man.
We were talking about this last night, David and I, how I was, you know, had this, you know, just having this outpour of just like, am I doing the right thing for Zariah? Like, I devoting so much of my time and energy to this, to my studies and to this company and to the, David is just such a beautiful speaker, and he puts into words what I'm feeling so easily. The guy is just a poet.
Yeah, I agree.
And I won't even capture a percentage of what he was, how he said it. And we had that whole conversation about how Symbio is going to do such amazing things that David knows what's going to come of it is so beautiful. And, he thinks about his kids and about my kids and about the future, and it's and lets that speak through him. And it was just so powerful the way he put it. And I totally missed the mark on it and describing it, but it was really reinforcing that I am doing the right thing, that any question that I have of, oh, is this right for Zariah and all that, this is the most I can do for Zariah. I'm sacrificing my time and energy for this larger thing, this love that's just pouring through us. So
that's beautiful. So let's talk about a little bit about your music, because we have just a few minutes left.
Sure.
So just tell me about your music.
I got into electronic music through the band EOTO, E-O-T-O, the End of Time Orchestra. Mm. It's the two percussionists from the String Cheese Incident. Mm-hmm. That was the first concert, the first electronic concert I ever went to out in Colorado, that was with these guys. And they do it all live and improvised every night. And so it's this amazing experience. You know, they're 45-year-old dudes, 50 now. So just so inspired by these guys. And, you know, I want to do that. That was the most inspiring thing I've ever seen. But, you know, I want to start making that. And so for the past 6 years or so, I've just devoted my extra time and energy that I've got here and there through school and work and Zariah and whatever else I'm doing to just sitting down with Ableton Live, this music production program. Mm-hmm. And I surround myself outside of Symbio world and outside of school and work, with music producers, and you know, from all around the world, and all my best friends are music producers, and so it's a way for me to express this this desire for expression that I think we all have. And you know, I used to paint with oils and all that, but that's, you know, with Zariah, the chemicals and all that, just it wasn't worth it for me to, you know, and I just, the cleanup and all that. With this, I just have to click on a button, this program opens, and there's an infinite palette of any sound, rhythm, melody, bass line, nothing. It's absolutely infinite of where I can go with it. And being blessed with such talented friends, you know, I've gotten to pick up on certain techniques and all that. But what it really comes down to is just I truly believe that alongside all the regular curriculum in school, that electronic music should be necessary. Instead of learning the recorder or whatever, they should have to download Ableton Live. I truly think that this is the way of the future for expression for anyone. You know, it's so accessible and it's so fun and easy, and you'll come up with something unique and beautiful every time you sit down. And so for me, that's what it's been, is just sitting down with myself. Where am I at? Letting go of any concept of what I want to come out of it, and just start making a beat, and then start making a melody. And then before I know it, there's this living, breathing organism in front of me that I kind of helped facilitate into existence. But really, I'm just kind of a witness to it coming into being. And it's just an amazing meditation process and practice for me. The stuff that I make is mainly electronic. It's all electronic based, since I'm using a computer. Right. And I've got all these different VSTs, external instruments, all that kind of stuff feeding into this program. And I don't know what half of these things do. I kind of have a grasp on it, but I really don't have any idea. And so I kind of feed one thing into another thing, and all of a sudden it's something else. And I just get to say, ooh, that sounds cool. Pick that and just put that into a composition.
Yeah.
And it's just so beautiful to witness this thing kind of come into existence through itself, and just try to, you know, remove Danny as much as possible. That's cool. Okay. Put it in there. No, stop and don't judge it. And before you know it, it's either got this really dark, scary sounding thing, or this really beautiful and light lullaby, or whatever it might be. And I've noticed that most of my music sort of turns into, I'd say, like electronic music for kids. And,
nice.
And yeah, it's kind of funny. It's Zariah loves it. Zariah is my number one fan. Every time I play him a new song, Daddy, is this for me? Yes, for sure. It's for you. Like, and you know, it's because a lot of my friends say, you know, like, even if I make scary, like any scary music, quote unquote, scary music that I make, it always kind of has a smile to it. It's always kind of playful. It's always kind of like, I'm not taking this too seriously. And I love that. Like, that's how I kind of approach life. As serious as I might take anything, I can walk away and just laugh about the exact thing that I was taking serious. Because I really don't know if there's any point to anything that I'm doing at all in life. I'm just kind of hoping that there is, and allowing it to fuel me and get me out of bed.
Well, that's wonderful. So we have a song here of yours. Why don't you introduce it for us?
All right, we've got a track that I made. It's called The Flown, and I made it with a bunch of cool sounds, kind of textural psychedelic elements with some pretty kind of floaty, vibey different instruments. So at some point I kind of want to involve myself in a project that's more based around an actual child's electronic music project. So this might be one of the tracks on that. I hope you guys enjoy. Play it for your kids and your grandma. We'll be right back.
Wow, that was really beautiful stuff, man. I can definitely tell what you mean about it sounding like children's music. It was really nice. I look forward to hearing more. One of the things that's immediately obvious about you is that you live life in you just seem like a really aware human being and really tuned into your emotional self. And I think that's beautiful, man. I think that's great. And I love the, like, you post videos online of you and Zariah, and I can see, like, you guys have a similar sense of humor, which is fun. And that's amazing, man. I love it.
Thanks, dude. Yeah. I mean, he's the funniest person I know ever. It's like, I feel guilty sometimes because I feel like this creature was created to make me laugh. Like, we go out into public and I'm just laughing the whole time. Like, I look like a crazy person because this little guy is just doing the silliest things. And maybe just because I was thinking about this earlier today, like, is he that funny because, you know, he's just kind of learned how to make dad laugh. And if dad's laughing, we're happy and this is good. I don't know. I don't know how that works psychologically. But, you know, starting young, if he made like a funny thing and I laughed to him, he's like, yay, daddy's happy. And it's kind of this cyclical thing where I want to make him happy and he wants to make me happy. And it's just the most fun relationship I've ever been a part of and most rewarding thing ever. He's just constantly trying to make me laugh and just always trying to lighten the mood. And you know, he's so in touch with daddy, are you okay? You know, if I'm stressed out or something, he's totally aware of that. He'll scratch my back before bed. You know, this kid is just so, this last year has been super tough for me just being alone without a partner. Mm-hmm. And he has just played, he's just pulled on, you know, all the roles, that of comfort that I didn't have before.
That's sweet.
And he's just so in touch with my emotions, and I'd like to think vice versa. And I'm just so grateful for this symbiotic relationship that I've developed with this creature. He's my biggest teacher, my biggest inspiration, and the reason why I continue to do the things I do. So I love him so much. I'm just so grateful that you're willing to, you know, be the facilitator of putting such importance on that in life. So thank you so much for doing that.
Well, thank you for what you're doing, man. It's beautiful. So that's about all we have time for today, but I want to thank you so much for being with us, Danny. It's been a great honor to be in your presence.
Oh, thank you so much, brother, for doing all the work that you've done and for having me on today. I was nervous about it just because you've had such amazing guests in the past, and you know, I hope that I can provide anything to the community that you've developed. If not, oh well, I'm one out of 18 that were just okay. But the rest of them have been so amazing and so inspiring. And so thank you so much for doing the work you do. I'm so grateful, and bowing my head to you now too.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. All right. Well, thank you for being on, Danny, and have a great day.
Be well. You too.
Bye-bye.